We are now going to welcome to the show Teresa Hoetzenrode.
Good morning, Simon.
I hope I didn't butcher your name.
No, all good.
Good, thank you. Well, you're here to have a chat with us as the head of the sparkling program for Ovata Sparkling,
yeah,
a new
correct,
sparkling.
Yeah.
I must say I very much enjoyed it on more than one occasion. It's beautiful sparkling.
Nice.
And under 25 bucks, it's good.
Yep.
So tell us a little bit about the range, or, you know, there's only one at the moment. Is that, am I right saying that?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. So
go for it. Tell us the story and what does it mean and all that sort of thing. And how did you come to be the winemaker?
Well, I guess I joined the team about 12 months ago now. So the project has sort of been something that's sort of been in the pipeline for about 3 years. So it sort of predated me. And is a collaboration between, I guess, myself with, you know, a lot, I have a lot of sparkling winemaking experience and the team, our team at Oak Ridge in the Yarra Valley. It's been a long process. So I guess I joined at the sort of end of the process, I guess, just to sort of bring it all together. And we finally sort of looked at all the final blends and brought a spotling. So it was released in sort of late October last year.
Okay. So it hasn't been out long, but it's certainly some wide ranging. I know certainly Dan Murphy's have it, given that kind of connection with Endeavour and stuff. So
yes. That's
great. And obviously that helps keep the price down for people. So it's beautiful packaging. It's something you'd be proud to take to, you know, as a present or whatever, you know, if you're taking it along to someone's place. Plus, it delivers with the value and the taste, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess that was the key in terms of, I guess, the style we were trying to achieve. And I mean, that's very much, you know, it's very much driven by being from the Yarra Valley. I guess what we were sort of looking to do is create this wine. This sort of has this sort of lovely balance of drinkability, but also, you know, there's a level of seriousness to the wine as well. It stays on lees for about a minimum of 18 months, but we've got some reserve parcels that we're sort of back blending in. So they actually have sort of, you know, more than, you know, 2 or 3 years worth of age on them. So that sort of blend of sort of freshness, I guess, but complexity sort of gives that sort of lovely balance, which sort of makes it seem probably a little bit more serious than the price point would suggest, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. And Ovata, it means something. I can't remember. I read the press release.
It's from the sort of Latin term ovatus, which means to celebrate, rejoice or applaud. So I think that's sort of really quite a lovely sort of reflection of, you know, how most people associate sparkling wine. People tend to drink it on an occasion.
And with other people.
Not that you always need to, but so I think it's sort of a lovely sort of, association for a sparkling.
Totally. That makes 100% makes sense. Are there plans, and you don't need to say if it's all kind of secret, are there plans to, pardon me, to extend the range or to do a vintage or anything like that down the track?
Let's watch this space. Anything's possible. I guess Yarra is a fairly sort of finite fruit resource. So at this stage we're just looking for it to be sort of non-vintage and I guess see how well it goes and go from there.
Yep, that makes sense. Now, you said you've had some previous sparkling wine experience, which, given you're the head of the program, I'm sure that's the case, right? So where else have you been before here?
So I spent a very long time at Yulumba and Hillswell, which is sort of
now. You're a South Australian girl, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I'm based in South Australia.
I can hear that.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. So what does that mean?
Because South Australian, there's a slight accent. It's quite pronounced when you when you can have heard it. And but anyway, that's a good thing, right? You're thoroughly from wine country.
But yeah, I guess my sort of, I grew up as a winemaker, if you like, through the ranks at Yulumba, and they own Hillsmith Family Estates these days. But They had quite a significant sparkling program, and one of their, you know, wines were in portfolio was obviously Jance.
Yeah.
So I've worked with Jance for many years. And then I sort of did a quick flip over into working with Petaluma and Crozer.
Mm-hmm.
So I've now come to the sparkling program with Endeavour. So, I've sort of worked across a lot of cool climate regions across my career.
Yeah.
So Adelaide Hills.
The Jance time, would you have been down in Tassie a fair bit?
I didn't do so much of the vineyard stuff. I was more based doing more of the operational winemaking, so blending and secondary fermentation part of it.
Up in Barossa?
Although these days it's all based in Tasmania.
Mm.
So,
But that was quite early then, certainly the early days of Jance. It was really quite early for Tassie, I would have thought.
I'm not sure where Jance sits in terms of the starting like point of
known it for a long time is probably the reason I say that.
I mean, I think Yolumba purchased it in sort of the late 80s and it was already an established brand back then, so maybe it was sort of established in the mid to early 80s.
Yep.
It would have been established in the 80s, but I mean Aris was sort of also, that was sort of the starting point of Aris, so the mid-80s. So I'd say that's sort of when Tassie sort of started to kick off as a sparkling region.
Yeah. And how are you finding the Yarra now in, but as contrast to the other regions you've worked with?
Oh, I'm actually really loving it. It's actually one of the regions that I've not spent a great deal of time with because I never really had the exposure sort of in my previous
portfolio,
it's been a region that I have wanted to get involved with, so it's actually been quite fun working with Dave and the team at Oak Ridge to sort of bring this all together. And then obviously he has a huge amount of experience in the Yarra and is well respected, and it's been really great working with him.
It's been really good
Getting involved in the Yarra and seeing the difference between the vineyards there and the fruit and just the styles of the wines relative to sort of where I've worked previously.
Mm. So you've made one vintage, or, obviously one release, non-vintage, obviously. So you've got another one, I suppose, getting ready for release towards mid-year?
Yeah, being non-vintage, it's sort of, the vintages sort of roll together, so it's about having
you sort of release when you roll through the other one a bit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We need to make sure that we get the right amount of tirage time, time on lead, so, because we're wanting to get, you really don't get any sort of level of autolysis in the wines until sort of at least 12 months, but more realistically probably 18 months, and that's why we sort of want to have that sort of minimum time, but also introduce a percentage of reserve wine so that we can, have some of that sort of level of complexity coming through.
Yeah, yeah. And so, so you've kind of got a bit of a recipe roughly, and then year by year it sort of might change or whatever.
I don't like to use the word recipe when it comes to winemaking, but yes, like a blend.
But in a kind of a bit of a direction.
Yeah.
I want that, but then I want a bit of that and that.
And I guess because it's a transfer product, so it's not traditional method, we're able to sort of put down separate tirage parcels and then blend to where we, think it should be sitting. So that gives us quite a lot of flexibility in getting the blend to where we want it.
And have you picked the material that will go into a future one from this year's vintage?
Oh, yes, absolutely, yes. I mean, you've probably heard from many winemakers already that, this vintage is completely opposite to last year's. I think most people will be finished by Easter, I reckon, around the country, if they're not already.
And Easter's the end of, it's Friday week, right?
Yeah, it's crazy because last year we had, a vintage where we were only just starting to hit our straps at this time of, at this point in time in March, and now most people are almost finished. But we picked about a month ago in the Yarra, So the wines are just pretty much just coming together now, finishing their ferment, and I'll start sort of packing them up and deciding on, you know, the bits and pieces and where the blends might sit. We do a bit of old oak fermentation as well, so it's just about sort of then working out where everything's going to go and how it's going to be put together.
That's a bit of fun, hey?
It is a bit of fun.
That keeps you busy, obviously, through the whole year.
Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because, sparkling's one that's almost, you know, it rolls.
There's always something
right
to do, kind of.
Yeah. And I think people sort of have this sort of vision of winemakers with just busy at vintage and then nothing else happens, but that's not true.
No, that's when your work starts, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually sort of nice at the moment. I've just had a bit of a chance to breathe because it's been quite busy across all the regions. So, you know, getting fruit in and managing ferments and all that sort of thing. So while everything's just sort of in ferment, that's actually sort of, for a white or sparkling winemaker, that's your chance to sort of just relax slightly until the next sort of tranche of busyness comes.
Yeah, that's calm before the storm, in a way.
yeah.
As you describe it, if there's always sort of things to do through the year, a lot of winemakers will get through vintage, put everything, you know, away and get everything ready and, you know, to sort of start maturing for a while before bottling. And then they have a time to maybe some would go and do vintage on the other side of the world, some would just have a holiday and that sort of thing. Do you make sure that you sort of have a period where you can actually get away and actually have a, you know, sort of proper break from, you know, being around tanks and barrels?
Yeah, I guess traditionally I've sort of split the year into two halves. So sort of July, when my kids were sort of a bit smaller, we always used to try and take sort of the July school holidays as sort of a time. It was sort of a good time to sort of split the year where you've kind of come off the busyness of vintage, sort of pack things down a bit, and it's almost like a little mini breather. Yep. And then I tend to always make sure that just, you know, around Christmas time, I usually take a bit of a break as well, just because I sort of need to regather the energy and refocus in preparation for the busyness of vintage. So that's usually time to go to the beach or something and just relax and chill and sort of recalibrate.
Read a book that's not a wine manual.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, that's cool. Do you reckon you've got winemaking kids in the making?
No.
Well, that's pretty definite.
No, they've gone. I think it tends to go either one way or the other. They get really excited and, you know, I know plenty of people that their kids have done that, but no, my kids are completely opposite. One's a nurse and one's doing law, so not related. I'm sure they'll drink wine as they do appreciate it.
Should appreciate it. And yeah, mum's been showing them things, I'm sure, for many years at the dinner table and things.
If they wish to.
Well, that's it. It's interesting, isn't it? You know, there's certainly if you, as you know, families and things, if you go away travelling and taking kids along to wine regions and things, it's nice when they then are able to go and, you know, travel themselves and they actually choose to go to wine regions again when they were apparently so bored and so over it. Not another one.
That's very much the way it rolls with children, I think. They come back, they realise, you think that they haven't taken anything in and then you realise, oh, they actually have.
Yes, and then they actually appreciate all of the the history of what they were involved in. Yeah,
exactly. It just takes a few years in between.
Yeah. So are you based in the Yarra or are you still in SA or where do you live?
So I'm back in SA now, but I have, during vintage, while we were picking and stuff, I was based myself in the Yarra at Oak Ridge while we were processing things to, you know, make sure everything was going smoothly.
And do you get out in the trade a bit with this wine? Because I'm assuming it's more widely available than just at the Endeavour, at Dance, you know, is it? Am I right with that? It's exclusive to there?
I think it's mainly in Dan's and BWS. I'm not exactly sure whether there's any sort of other avenues of retail for it.
I should have known the answer to the question before I asked it.
That's okay.
We had a
pretty swanky launch event in Sydney, which is quite lovely and very glamorous in October when we launched it. I guess I've done, you know, a couple more sort of media stuff than actually out in the trade at this point in time. But I think there might be some more stuff coming up this year.
What's your dog? Who's your dog? What's his name?
Oh, sorry. Can you hear him?
That's all right, though.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, he's being naughty. He's a Pomeranian Jack Russell Cross.
All right. Is he?
I was hoping that you wouldn't be able to hear him.
It doesn't matter at all. It adds that we just spoke with Ken Parfrey, who runs the Radio Springs Hotel down in Lionville, northwest Victoria. Anyway, he had all his house guests in there. They got four rooms of accommodation, so they were all having a fantastic time celebrating a wedding and a birthday and a thing. So, background noise is good.
Rupert's a bit naughty.
Well, look, it's been great. And is there? Are you part of the wider Sparkling program as well? Are there other brands that you labels you work on?
Yeah, I've been working with Ockie Myberg down at Joseph Creamy. So we've been we're actually about to do a Discordant liqueuring this week. But I've sort of been working on the program there, and probably another few other bits and pieces in the pipeline, which I probably can't talk about.
Don't have to give us a scoop. Yeah, but we do like
definitely
scoops.
Working across regions, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, that must be fun. Like,
it is fun.
And do you find that you run into people that you've known over your journey in wine? Yeah. As you go to different regions, you go, here you go. You know, you used to work with them at Yolumba or wherever.
Yes, all the time. I guess working for sort of Yolumba and sort of in the Accolade Group has expanded my network. You know, I've been in the industry for a long time, but yeah, the wine industry is very much like that. You know, And us as a sparkling community is quite small because we're probably a fairly limited breed within the greater sort of wine community because, you know, not everyone does sparkling.
Yeah.
It's a very sort of tight-knit group, that's for sure. So, yeah, even in the Yarra, you still do bump into people you know.
So is that a tight-knit group because all of the red wine bullies push you into a corner and you have to sit together, or are you elitist and you're over there because you're the sparkling makers?
Oh.
Careful.
I'm very careful when I say it. No, I think, what did someone I know said, anyone can be a red wine maker. I'm probably going to create all sorts of issues with saying that. I can't remember who said that to me, but no, seriously, I think everyone has their own specialty and you very much sort of like, I've always felt that people have sort of an affinity for a certain sort of winemaking style, whether it's red or white or sparkling.
Yeah, and you probably get continually drawn to that that style unless you make a conscious change to step into something completely new, right?
And I think, just for like lots of different reasons, I've just always been focused into the sort of white and sparkling area, probably because I'm fairly sort of science background and it's just, it's just always something that's really interested me.
Mm. Well, I mean, there's a lot of technique, there's a lot of equipment that you otherwise don't use for making still wine, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's quite complex. Yeah. And I guess, I sort of do liken... In some ways, there is a kind of similarity between sort of premium red wine making and sparkling, and the fact that, you know, you're always sort of looking forward because, you know, a high-end red, you've got, you know, a couple of years in oak or whatever, and then you sort of might have a couple of years in bottles. So by the time you're sort of launching that into the market, you've got to have some sort of forethought about how that wine's going to look and sort of a vision of how it's going to age. And sparkling is not dissimilar to that in terms of, you know, you do a bit of barrel ferment, but you also, you know, you've got that time of the bottle fermentation time where that wine is aging. So the wine that you start off with as a base wine is quite different, you know, in 4 years' time you know, 2 to 4 years' time when you release it than what you started with. So, there's some similarities there, even though they're completely different wines. But it's a similar way of viewing the process, I guess.
Well, if you think about it, there's also one step back from that, the foresight of, the picking at the right time to get that berry to be exactly the right to do the job you want it to do. Because, yes, you can use a meter and measure the Baume and all of that, but it doesn't tell you about taste and it doesn't tell you about all of those other things that really a human needs to taste and judge. And in your case, you're tasting grapes that are a lot less ripe than a table wine, right? So kind of going, okay, it's got those bits, that's good, and that's what I will need. So, I mean, it's great. I mean, if you think about it, there's a lot of expertise along the whole journey.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're right in the fact that analysis can only tell you so much. And for me, winemaking is, even though I'm quite a sort of science-focused person, I think there's a lot of winemaking, there's a lot of intuition in winemaking, and it is about that taste and sort of going into a vineyard and looking and kind of getting a vibe or a feel. And I've always sort of been very much sort of a bit of a gut feel. So it's like, I feel like when you walk in, you can have the numbers, but when you walk into a vineyard, you just
get
taste
a sense,
and you get the feel, and you're looking at everything and making sort of a judgment call and all of that. That's the best part of winemaking in some ways.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And especially when you get it right and you go, yep, well, at least my gut's right, you know? And, I love that. Intuition.
Yes.
Good word. I'm going to use that. Thank you for coming on, Teresa. Everyone, go and grab a bottle of Ovata sparkling, about $23 or something at Dan's. So really good proposition and well done. And keep making lots of it.
No worries. Thanks. I will try. We've got a bit more fruit this year than last year, so good. That's good. So it's helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. And please reach out and let us know when there's some new news on the things you can't talk about.
Sure will. Okay. Thanks for having me, Simon.
Thanks, Teresa.